I mean, listen, we're talking about practice.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
This is KETR's Locker Room, your sports podcast for Northeast Texas. Each week, we look at the biggest headlines in sports and highlight local sports stories. Here's your hosts.
All right, welcome back from the extended holiday break. Cooper Welch, Taylor Phelps, and Jordan Davis, your hosts here on KETR's Locker Room. It is Wednesday, January 8th, 2014. We've got quite a big show in store for you today. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. There's a new coach at UT for the first time in what seems like...
forever.
Yeah, forever, I guess. At least a decade and a half. We've got to talk about the national championship, the BCS finally being over. Yep. And, of course, we have Ben Reichert in with us today. He is the new Director of Media Relations for A&M Commerce. He took over for Rand Champion, sort of in a weird jumble with bowl games and everything else coming on you that you didn't expect the bowl game, I'm sure.
I knew it was coming up. It was the delay that I think kind of threw everything off. We thought that I was going to come in right after the bowl game. Rand was going to stay for the bowl game, and then obviously Mother Nature had different intentions.
Yeah. So a little bit more work maybe than you originally expected right away.
Well, I mean, not necessarily the more work. It was just a different type of work than what I was expecting. I was expecting to come in and jump right in with basketball and kind of hit the ground running. And, of course, you know, that first week, anytime you're on a new job, it's you know, you're still trying to get your feet on the ground and, you know, learn where things are, who people are, what they do. And, of course, when you get a bowl game thrown right on top of you, it makes it a little bit tougher.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just start off, like, where you're from, how you got here, things like that.
Right. Well, I'm from Fairfield, Texas, born there, raised there. I'm a small-town guy myself.
All right.
I've been at Stephen F. Austin the last 6 years. I'm also a graduate from there, so 9 of the last 10 years I've lived in Nacogdoches. I've lived in the East Texas area for just about my entire adult life since I left home. Spending a year as an intern at the University of North Texas after I graduated back in 2006. I was a radio television guy myself there at SFA. I had a journalism minor. But I went on to UNT, then back over to Stephen F. I've worked in baseball there the last 6 years. I was the men's basketball contact there the last 2 years, which we had a really good run these past couple of years. We were 27-5 last year. Got to see some really neat places and just barely missed out on the NCAA tournament. But came on over here just, you know, last month. I know Ryan from his days at McNeese, and then Josh Jorgensen, who I know you guys know. He used to work with me at Stephen F. So, you know, had a connection there. You know, the opportunity came up. I took it. It was, you know, always wanted to be a director. Lead your own office and, you know, make a few decisions on your own. So the chance happened, and, you know, so far so good. It's worked out really well.
All right. How about the system of media directors at SFA? Can you explain that? There were, what, three of you, right?
Right, yeah. We were a three-man office at the time. Whenever I came in, I was kind of number three of three on that totem pole, and the guy that was the head guy had been there for about 7 years at the time, and, you know, he had never left till just this past year, so he's down at Lamar now. Guy really mentored me, but there was three of us. I came in, took over, like I said, took over baseball, took over volleyball, and I believe I had tennis and equestrian at the time were the four sports that I got. And eventually, you know, over the course of time, things get reshuffled a little bit. I took over women's basketball, I believe, my third year, and then men's basketball after that. Whenever I left this past year, I still had volleyball, still had baseball, still had men's basketball, but also had cross country. But I'd moved up kind of into the number two spot. And, of course, like I said, my boss at the time hadn't gone anywhere in a while, so it wasn't much room for advancement there. But it was a good office. It was a fun time. You know, guys that I really respect in the business, and also guys I can call friends for, you know, the rest of my life. So it was a really, really good experience there.
All right. Well, how about talk about just what it takes to get into the sports media relationships and business. I know I'm in the program right now here doing grad school to get into that program. But talk about the challenges that you face every day, things like that.
Well, you know, it's I think I kind of took a roundabout way to get into it myself. Like I said, I was an RTV guy myself. My original aspiration was was to, to do the play-by-play thing. I wanted to, I wanted to be the voice, like so many people do.
Yeah.
And, I did that when I was at SFA. I did a lot of high school sports in the area. I got to see a lot of awesome kids that I see playing pro ball now, which is great. But, and I'm sure you guys see this, but it's a very competitive field. It's a very competitive field. It's hard to really break in and really get up to that upper echelon. And as I realized that, I was like, well, I kind of need a, fallback plan. I need a backup plan. I need something else. What else can I still do where I'm still working in media, where I'm still working in sports, still working in what I want to do every day? And just kind of stumbled upon on media relations, on sports information. And it was actually through a journalism class that I was taking, a news writing class. They said, the assignment was, what can you do with this job? What type of jobs are available to you? And it was literally just something on a list that I saw, and it's like, well, that sounds interesting. I circled it. I got it. I ended up doing a lot of research on it. I was like, well, shoot, this is great.
Yeah.
This is right up my alley. And eventually, like I said, whenever I graduated, I looked into possible internships. I hadn't worked in media relations at Stephen F., so I didn't have that going for me. But the guys at UNT said, hey, you sound like you know your stuff. You're a strong writer. You can get in here and we can teach the ground floor, and that's what they did. So, and those are guys over there at UNT that I still have great relationships with. It's still the same core people there that mm-hmm. it was 7 years ago whenever I was there. So I'm still able to lean on them and call them up and talk to them. But, whenever I moved to Stephen F., got in the Southland Conference, travel a lot, and you become friends with these people, it's because everybody has common interests. Mm-hmm. There's definitely a competitive side to it, like there is in any side of sports. And that's a lot of the fun, because you love to, show up at, at somebody else's house and go in there and, your team goes in there and you're not supposed to win and you come away with a win and, you may shake their hand a little bit and then you get back in the car. It's like, well, that was fun. That was fun. So, but at the end of the day, you're all friends and, it's very similar to coaching in a lot of ways, I think, just in the networking, mm-hmm. but it's just more on a business side of things. And we do face a lot of challenges, definitely do. Sometimes coaches or student athletes or even administrators do some things that publicly that you just don't want them to do. And when the wrong person sees it, you kind of have to get in there and weather the storm. Sometimes you have to find creative ways to do that. Mm-hmm. We dealt with a few of those at Stephen F. when I was there, and I'm sure at some point, some way we'll end up having to deal with it here. But that's all part of the game. And
Taylor,
right. But there's all sorts of stuff. I mean, and there's lots of fun stuff too. I mean, mm-hmm. part of my big job is I get to play on social media. Every day of the week. So there could be worse things. I could be sitting in a cubicle selling insurance.
That's very true. We'll talk about the things you want to see changed here and the things you like here right now.
Well, I think Rand and the rest of those guys, I think they left things in pretty good shape from what I can tell. Just, the few weeks that I've been in here, I've been impressed, with the organization, the way everything mm-hmm. was left. And I liked the changes in the website I know they made over the last couple months. I'm still learning the back end of that site because at Stephen F. we used a different provider. So I'm still learning that a little bit and the capabilities of it. But so it's been very, very user friendly so far. I like the look of it. I like the function of it, which is good. I think moving forward, we're going to really try to engage people a lot more than what maybe was done before. And I think social media is probably the way to do that. That's something that kind of a shared vision that I know myself and Ryan and Josh all have. And I keep referring back to SFA, but when I was there with Josh, that was something that we really kind of, we had the same look about that. We wanted to do that. We were able to implement some things there. And I know that coming in, that was something that he definitely wanted to do a little bit more to engage our fans, engage our student body maybe a little bit more. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that here in the next few months. And if it anything, definitely going into the fall, whenever football starts, we can really kind of start anew.
All right. Well, guys, let's talk a little bit about get you guys involved in the discussion. Talk about men's and women's basketball here. I know we've got a doubleheader tonight. That's against, A&M Kingsville, right?
A&M Kingsville, yes.
And then another doubleheader coming up on Sunday, and that is against?
That one's at Angelo State.
Okay, yes. At
Angelo.
All right, well, let's talk both doubleheader games. First, Taylor, I think you know the most about men's basketball
Probably.
Since you're on the team.
I hope so.
Yeah. We're not going to get any insider information from Jordan or anything.
You can. I keep up with the lines.
All right. Well, then there you go. Well, let's talk women's basketball first.
Okay,
let's start out with the women. Get them out of the way.
Let's get them out of the way.
Okay. Let's start off just tonight. The women play A&M Kingsville in the doubleheader. They start off at 5:30 p.m. opening tip. I mean,
right about 5:30.
Yeah. What do you guys expect in that game?
You know, our girls have not had the best of starts, but mm-hmm. you know, conference time has begun, and they're 1-0,
they're one and one.
Yeah. But two very close games.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, you look at that. Kingsville's, you know, usually a tough matchup here. You know, even in football, you know, across all sports.
Yeah.
Usually a pretty competitive game. But as far as what Kingsville has done, I know on the men's side hasn't been as impressive as some of the other teams. But I mean, league play, we talk about it, you know, every year. It's tough. It doesn't matter who you play, and it doesn't matter what conference it is. When you come down to league competition,
it gets harder.
It's going to be a battle every night.
Yeah.
And so you got to come to play.
I just think the girls, if they can win this game, but they have to shoot way better than what they've been shooting. I talked to Coach Anderson not too long ago, and she's like, our biggest problem is we cannot shoot. She's like, we got the dribblers, we have the defense, we just can't shoot. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no matter how hard in practice I try to get them to shoot, she just don't have any shooters on her team. And she told me this past spring, like last spring, she was really looking for a shooter. Mm-hmm. And they had a shooter, but she ended up going to Tarleton. Mm-hmm. So their biggest weakness is their strength. And I know Kingsville is going to play back off of them to make them shoot. And they have to hit their shots.
I'm glad
tonight.
You said that, Jordan, because I've noticed that too, that shooting seems to be their weakness. And usually,
weakness.
Typically on a girls' team,
that's a strength.
Usually you have, yeah, a couple. Just yeah. That's all they do is mm-hmm. shoot. And it seems like we don't have that. I mean, Devin's a pretty good shooter. I mean, we have a couple people who look like they could be, but, I mean, the shots just aren't falling. Yeah. And that might come with time. But the only strength we really have, the biggest strength we have, is Bree Harris in the middle.
Yeah, and rebounding.
And Abby also down there. Just I've never seen people get more rebounds than those two.
Abby's just too big. She's too big, too wide. She's skilled. Like, she could play 3, 4, or 5. And mm-hmm. Bree, the biggest weakness with her, she cannot go right. And Coach Anderson keeps telling her, go right. You'll get like 30 points a game if you go right. But, mm-hmm. I mean, the girls, they always find a way in conference time to win. Like the big upset they had last year in the tournament. The
big
girls
that they had a few days ago.
Yeah, like they always find a way to beat the teams mm-hmm. that always supposed to slam them. So,
and I feel like the only two wins is not indicative of their actual performance this year.
What?
A lot of games have been close, buzzer beaters at the end of the game. And they've had some blowouts, but I mean, that's against SFA, Division 1 opponents.
I mean,
that have been very difficult games. So it's not like they're just, this is a team you just write off either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good team.
Well, you know, I've been here, you know, for a month now, so I've gotten to see them a few times, and you know, really has aside, I was at the SFA game, and even that, for the first 10 minutes, I thought they played very well, and they actually mm-hmm. did shoot the ball well from the outside, and then, you know, SFA just has a different, you know, caliber of athlete and whatnot. But the other games, all the games that I've seen here, that have been extremely competitive, you know, extremely competitive, have come down in the last couple of minutes, and most of them, you know, we had the lead there late. And so, you know, if you're able to string together, you know, like we got one in overtime the other night, a close game that we were able to get to go our way. Mm-hmm. If you're able to get another one like that maybe tonight, then you start to build a little confidence. And that's what you want. You know, you start to learn how to win. And, you know, when you have close games, you got to get over that hump. And then you got to stay over
it.
And then hopefully you're able to go downhill a little bit from there, you know, play downhill.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm reading off of your information that you put together for these games, but let's talk about
if there's any typos, you can blame my GA.
right. Well, let's talk about Brianna Harris. We talked about her already a little bit, but also Danielle Dixon. They're both just less than 100 points away from scoring 1,000 points as Lions. That's pretty impressive. I mean, you don't see that even in bigger schools. You don't see people getting up to 1,000 points.
Well, Danielle has been like the main scorer for the past 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I figured she was going to get 1,000 some kind of way. I mean, mm-hmm. she's the one person on the team that every team knows, okay, if anybody else is going to score, number 23 is going to score.
29.
Oh,
wait, you're right.
Yeah, 23 is going to score.
Can't have a 29.
She's got to score 29.
That's illegal.
Yeah. And I mean, she's an awesome scorer. Like, I seen her play all 4 years. She has grown tremendously. Like, when she first came in as a freshman, she was more of a, you know, distributor, trying to get stuff started. But after her sophomore year and after Matlin left, I think Madeline, that talk she had with her, like, really got her to be like, okay, they need you to score. And, I mean, other than Breonna Harris, I mean, that's their best scorer. I mean, Danielle can get 20 easily every night if she wanted to. Mm-hmm. And I think them two has been a great thing for the Lions basketball for the women's side because they've been able to get better recruits to fit around them, and they've been able to recruit better players simply because mm-hmm. they have one of the best rebounders in all of Division II.
I mean, her rebounding ability
is crazy.
I mean, if you want to watch a game and just watch someone dominate something,
watch
her ability to dominate the boards
is crazy.
20 the other night.
She scores. Yeah, you say she scores. She doesn't score off back to the back basket post ups.
It's
she's scoring off offensive rebounds.
Yeah, offensive rebounds and free throws.
She's
scoring a scraper.
20 points a game off offensive rebounds,
like,
and free
11
throws.
Rebounds easily in the first half. She can get there easily.
She had the other game the other night, she had 10 boards first half, 10 boards in the second half, finished, you know, 15 points and 20 rebounds on the night. I mean, that's impressive. I don't care what level you're at.
she has great positioning. Like, she just knows a way to get the rebound. Like, mm-hmm. she's playing against girls way bigger than her. Yeah. Like, Brianna's not that big, and she's grabbing 12, 13 rebounds a game with ease because she knows how to use her body, and that's a smart player. And if they can get Abby the rebound like that, the Lions would be good. I mean, it increased their shooting a couple percentages, but other than that, they have the defense. They have the quickness. I mean, other teams just not going to just run all over them, like you said. Mm-hmm. The only team that I see they really had difficulty with was West Texas. And that's because West Texas has Trace McGrady women playing for them.
West Texas is, what, the best team in the women's side right now, right?
I think.
I'm honestly not sure.
I think they're the best.
I'm still new. I can blame
right, 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 right. We'll say card. It's a little too early to know.
They women was playing like men. Rebound is slapping the ball like Christian would grab a rebound off the men's team. I was like, oh, no, this is something isn't in their genes or something.
Yeah,
that was scary.
I bet.
Yelling and screaming on and ones. You're a girl. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing that?
Well, let's move across to the men's side and talk about their results against Kingsville recently. I know that they've lost 3 out of the last 5, but they won the last meeting. So 77-70 here at the Fieldhouse. So what
they
can you tell
always,
us about this game?
I mean, even the past 2 years, they always seem a team that we split with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a tough game. Going into the game and watching them on film, I mean, they're the same team. They try to bully you a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
They run a lot of sets. There's not really a set thing that they do. They just kind of play basketball, and you don't know what's going to happen. And that makes it tough to game plan, of course. Mm-hmm. But they're always not – That also allows you to beat them, because you know they don't have that thing that they do and they do better than you.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying more to take you out of your game than they are to try to play their game.
Yeah,
and usually that plays in our hands, especially at home. Now, this being a home game, you know, we lost Midwestern at home. It's another one we can't really let slip, especially in the Lone Star Conference.
Yeah,
you know how difficult it is, and just as a, you know, as a selling point for the conference, our conference was ranked number one in the nation in basketball. Division II.
All right.
So,
forward.
This is a conference that, though it's not as good as the Southland, a lot of our teams could go into the Southland and win games. I mean, that's realistic because, I mean, even when we've played Division I opponents, they hadn't been blowouts. I mean, 2 years ago we played Arkansas and lost by about 12. That's an SEC opponent.
The Arkansas coaches, that was
with,
a good team.
With 5 minutes left, we were down like 2 points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this conference is nothing to, you know, to put your nose about.
Sugarcoating, but I know Commerce, especially A&M Commerce, they hate A&M Kingsville more than they hate Midwestern. And that's the one team they will never, ever, ever, ever lose to at home if Coach Walker's here, is A&M Kingsville. They will always be A&M Kingsville at home.
Yeah. Well, that rivalry goes back, 80 years, it seems like, because old A&I and
– Yeah.
East Texas State, they
hated each other. They still hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
If the football team lose every game, as long as they beat A&M Kingsville, these Commerce people will be happy because they hate Kingsville with a passion.
Mm-hmm.
I know that for sure.
Yeah.
And when we beat them this year in football, it was like a lot of bragging. There was a lot of people going around, like the older people, alumni, who was like, A&M Commerce kicked their butt. That's what we want to see.
Yeah, although I think we want a better trophy next year. That
that trophy is so hideous.
Yeah,
that's sad. You fight that hard for a cup that ugly.
It's got character.
That's true.
That adds something to it. The ugliness makes it special. And like Tarleton, what is that one for playing Tarleton called?
The
President's Cup.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's a beautiful trophy, but it doesn't have the character that.
Yeah, you know, the drop that out of bus window.
That's a spin word right there. Yeah. That's a spin word.
I saw the trophy. I was like, Coach Carthel, that's the trophy. He was, this is it.
This is what we wanted?
This is what we wanted. And he was like, I have to talk to the conference about redoing this.
Yeah.
He was like, I do not want to put this up because it's ugly. But I think the game tonight is going to be close, but I just think Commerce have too much talent. They have too many scorers. The big man down low, he's doing baseline dunks like he's LaMarcus Aldridge or something.
And getting, 2.8 a block?
Yeah, he's like Ab, but can score. That's what he is to me. Like, he's exactly like Ab, except he can score. He has great anticipation. He knows when to jump for block shots. Sometimes he's a little bit too aggressive, but other than that, like, he's a hard, hard player. I like that number 11. What's his name, Christian?
Cameron Price.
Yeah, he's like a versatile player. You still got Tuss. Like, Tuss is still 6'5".
Still got Juice, Tyree Wooden.
And you get LaDon back the other day, too.
That was a big
come in and, like, you know, just like he'd never miss any time whatsoever. Just comes in and starts filling it up.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then there's that kid from Rhode Island, too, right? Transfer from Rhode Island.
Daniel West. Oh, yeah. Transfer. He's from Michigan, but, transfer from Rhode Island.
I had a little freshman point guard. He's nice.
DeAndre Carson.
Oh, God, he can
I mean, if you haven't seen the game, tonight's a perfect night to go
definitely
see two great games.
Yeah.
Two good rivalries and four great teams, I would say.
Yeah. I'd say one of the biggest thing, you know, from the other night, that the Midwestern game. You know, Midwestern, I think, had played three more games over the break. We had a 17-day layoff.
Yeah.
You know, and that's huge. Well, and if you look at Kingsville, their last game, December 18th, and now they're having to get on a bus to drive all the way up here. To come play us after, just a couple days after.
And I heard that bus ride is horrible.
Oh, it's Oof. Going to Eastern's far, going to Kingsville seems farther, just strictly because you're just going down to nothing. Like,
yeah,
it feels like you're leaving civilization farther.
Yeah.
You go to Eastern, you leave it pretty quick. You go past Fort Worth, there's nothing.
Yeah.
It seems like you're just going down to the pits of... You know what? When you go start going down the cable,
The
scenery changes in a hurry.
I mean, once you're there, it's not too bad.
No, it's bad. Once you're there, you don't want to be there.
All right, fine.
I seen that court on film, and I was like,
you
want to
get
God.
A win and get out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Go
it
home
just, it just looks so scrappy. It's like their team is scrappers. Like, you just go to a place
and
where
the gym
it's a court.
Fits the style.
Yeah,
that they
just
play.
Just nasty. Like, if I play basketball, I would hate playing a team like that. It's like, we gotta play them again.
But, Ben made a great point. The layoff is so hard. And, coming back to play Midwestern, you got practice for 5 days, but you're so sick of practice that you almost just, you're like, come on, let's do something else. So the game is almost just a break, and you start to not be as focused on the game as you are that it don't have to practice. And so, we've kind of gotten over that hump, and now it's like, okay, we see what's in front of us, focused in, it's all about the game. Because, those first 5 days of practice, you're like, come on now. We're going to practice every day.
I would think, during the fall semester when you're playing, you start getting to a routine. You're playing every couple of days. It's a routine. You practice for a couple of days, then you have the reward, then you have the game.
Exactly.
Then you go with nearly a 3-week layoff where you got guys going all the way across the country, spreading out, going back home for Christmas and whatnot. And then they come back and they're like, okay, now you're completely out of your routine again. You've got to, it takes you a little while to get going. It just does. And, you see that in all sports, but I think more so in basketball because of the way the scheduling falls over Christmas. You see it a lot more in this sport. But, hopefully you're able to, get the rust off the other night and, come out, you get a win tonight and start moving forward.
Yep. Well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the Angelo State game. We don't have too much time before we need to take a break, but. Talk women. How do you think they'll do against Angelo?
On the road, for some odd reason, our women play better. They're like the Cowboys. They play better on
Let's
the road.
Let's not talk about the Cowboys.
Let's hope they're not like the Cowboys.
Overall. On the road, they're better than they are at home. I don't know why. I just think they like going up and messing other people's mojo. But they always play good on the road. And I actually think they can beat Angelo State because Angelo State, the women, they
nearly beat them here.
Yeah.
They led the entire way. They led. Yeah. They led the entire way. I think Angelo was 6 of 33 in the first half. I mean, you know, we played, I thought, pretty well defense, but our offense was not good. I mean, and then at the same time, it was only about a 5-minute stretch that Angelo started making shots there in the second half. They were able to get a lead, and then, you know, we nearly came back. I mean, we had 3 shots at the basket there in the last 15 seconds and couldn't get any of them to fall, or else you're talking about a 2-0 conference team right now.
Yeah.
And you know, on the road, you can play much more loose than you can at home. And that's kind of the beauty of playing on the road is, you know, at home you're on edge. It's protect our home court. Someone's coming into our house to take something from us. Whereas on the road, you're going into their house, and you know, you can take a different approach to the game. Now, while you're still focused in mentally, you know, playing on the road has its advantages, and that's one of them. You can play a little more loose. You know it's a team you lost to already, and you're just like, let's just try to steal a win here.
Just go out there and just win. It's just, and when you're on the road, it's always an advantage for you because the person at home always has the most pressure because they're at home. They have to win at home. And for you to go in there, it's like, okay, we can play loose.
Especially against the team that already beat you. You're not expected to win.
Exactly. So that's the perfect chance to win because they are overlook you, especially if they're favorites at home. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, upsets are always bound to happen on the road, especially in basketball. Upsets can happen like that. Football is like, okay, do we really have a chance realistically? Like, it's like going to the Seahawks stadium. It's like, come on now. You know we're not going to win in Seattle.
Yeah.
But let's just give a good effort. But in basketball, it's like, hey, we can beat this team, like, especially if they're at home. Because, you know, most times when you're at home, you have your peers there, your family there. You have people there you're trying to, you know, impress. You're a little bit more timid to do stuff. But when you're a team that's coming in, it's like, full speed. Let's get them. They scared. Let's get them. You know, so I think Commerce, the girls, by the way, play better, you know, on the road than anybody. But the men, they play good home or away. It's simply because Coach Walker will not let them.
As far as the men's side, though, Angelo's been a very improved team. I know last couple of years they haven't made the conference tournament, but they've had a coaching change. They've had players follow that coach into Angelo. They have a big guy that's really, really, really good, one of the top players in the conference. And, you know, they're going to be a completely different team than what we've seen.
Well, they beat UTEP the other night. They went in there and beat UTEP at the Dom Haskins Center, you know, 75-70. I mean, that's a legit win right there. That's a huge win.
And they were a program prime, you know, to make an improvement. I mean, the General Center is one of the best gyms in all of the Lone Star Conference. And it might be, you know, some have a little more character, but as far as just the newness and, you know,
aesthetics.
Yes, yeah, overall look of the gym. It's a beautiful gym. So they were a program that, you know, even the school itself just has, you know, is complete renovations, and it's a great campus. So it was primed to be a good basketball school, and now we kind of see with a coaching change that's kind of coming into form, I guess you could say.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about Mack Brown, Charlie Strong, the BCS, and everything else. This is KETR's Locker Room.
You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
88.9 KETR is here to do some very specific things to keep you informed and entertained and to help train the next generation of broadcasters, journalists, and presenters. We've been at it since 1975, but only because folks like you keep us funded. Support what we do today by visiting KETR.org and clicking Support This Station. You'll be very glad you did.
All right, we are back here on KETR's Locker Room. Ben had to step out and go to a staff meeting, I think is what he said. But we're still here. We still got Cooper Welch, Jordan Davis, and Taylor Phelps. So, guys, a lot of stuff happened over the break. We had the NBA really get going and NCAA basketball. missed the whole bowl season, pretty much. We skipped the whole bowl season. Great Christmas, great New Year's, good to be in 2014. So let's get right into it and talk first. One of the biggest developments for the state of Texas, I think, is that Mack Brown is no longer the coach at UT. It's Charlie Strong from Louisville. So
it's going to take a minute for people to get used to that.
Yeah. Charlie Strong is the coach of UT.
That's just weird to me. Because you just – all these other big-name coaches, they was trying to get Jim Mora and Nick Saban and John Gruden. I'm surprised John Gruden didn't take it. Like, John Gruden has been offered a job every year, and he turns it down.
No. You know, I'm not surprised that he doesn't – why would you give up a job like he has? All he has to do is –
talk about sports.
Talk about football. And watch football. And, I mean, you know, he's won a Super Bowl. So it's not like there's a lot out there to prove. I mean, he just doesn't seem like the guy who's just like – he's not a Nick Saban type. He's not a all I want to do is coach and win. That's all that drives me. And you know, I respect that too because, you know, there's other things in life that he can, you know, take pride in and do. And the job security is better. Now, why John Gruden could always go back – to, you know, play-by-play and commentary and stuff like that, he can – why would he leave that now? Why would he leave that, you know, to go coach again and then get out of his zone? So I understand why he does what he does.
Yeah. I bet you anything that it's his family, too, that's keeping him from doing that.
They're probably
please
don't.
Yeah, because the football coach barely spends time with his
family. We've seen, what the stress can do to you as well. We had two NFL coaches this year have heart attacks
One of them had a heart attack because he knew he was about to get fired.
Yeah, Gary he should have known.
Gary Kubiak had a heart attack because his whole life went downhill this year.
Yeah, and it wasn't expected.
Yeah, and that's why he had a heart attack. Yeah. I would have a heart attack, too, if I'm expected to go to the Super Bowl and I went 2-14. I would have two heart attacks because I know, one, I'm going to get fired, and two, it's going to be a minute before I go to any other team. So I would have two heart attacks if that wasn't the case.
Yeah. But the position of Texas, as far as what they've been the past few years, do you feel like Charlie Strong's going to come in and be that type of coach that – all of a sudden, there's a huge turnaround, and Texas is back on top?
Or I don't think it's going to be like that.
I think it's going to be at least a year. I think he's got to pull his recruits together and really see what he can do at Texas.
He has to improve that defense first.
Yeah, you want defense, and you want offensive linemen. I think they need better offensive linemen because
they have the skill players.
Yeah, that's what. Well, I mean, they need a better quarterback, I think.
But they have the number one quarterback coming in.
Tyrone Swoops is already there. But, I mean, honestly, I think if you really want to succeed, we've seen the SEC succeed because they got offensive linemen. Yeah. They have huge offensive linemen that always go to the draft. That's their number one thing.
A lot of times that's the first, you know, out of the first 20 picks in the draft, that's 10 of them.
SEC linemen. Lineman. Yeah. So I think... And Mack Brown realized that. I mean, he was going for that, but he just didn't get the best ones. He needs to get the best ones.
The beauty of Charlie Strong, too, is that he has the connections in Florida.
Yeah.
South Carolina.
And he will obviously – South Carolina, and he will obviously be able to recruit heavy in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Texas is a recruiting hotspot. And Mack Brown used that to his advantage. I feel like he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, Florida is also another big place, and that's another big football
– speed.
You know, speed and things like that. And I think he'll really bring back the allure of coming to the University of Texas on what should be, you know, a top three program.
Every year.
Yeah.
It should be them, USC, and Florida every year. Like, I don't see...
And all three of those schools are down.
Yeah. Well, USC is down simply because many people take...
Texas should be in the upper echelon of USC, Texas, Ohio State...
Alabama.
Notre Dame, Alalabama, Florida. Those are the
big,
pristine
big schools,
programs that when you think of success, those are the places you think
of. You have
of.
To be a five-star athlete to even be considered to them schools.
Yeah.
But right now, Texas is like...
Texas is the third best school in the state.
Texas.
Yeah, Texas A&M right now has all the spotlight.
Well, and Baylor.
And Baylor, too.
Baylor is taking everybody's spotlight, low-key.
The only reason Texas A&M does is because of Johnny Football, but also their play in the SEC.
And they're building a brand-new stadium.
Yeah.
So that'll be nice.
But Baylor has a brand-new stadium, too.
Yeah, I've seen it.
That's beautiful.
It's right on the highway.
I heard it's beautiful.
Yeah. Right on the highway, right off the river. It's going to be a great stadium, especially for them, a program that's, you know, That's only going to increase their success.
Yeah. They're going to get more recruits simply because this past season they had a good year, even though they lost in the bowl game. I mean, beating Oklahoma. Then they beat Oklahoma State.
I think so.
They beat a lot of teams they always lose to, and they did it like on the road.
Well, I think the craziest thing, if you told me 5 years ago that a Baylor coach would turn down the UT job,
you would laugh.
Everybody would have laughed. I mean, somebody picking to stay with Baylor over UT, that's crazy. I mean, basketball, sure, but not
football?
In football.
I thought he was – when they said Coach Art Briles, I'm like, oh, he's gone. Mm-hmm. But when he said, I'm staying at Baylor – like, that just got Baylor
and look at what they've done. Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
You know,
brand new stadium.
Couple bowl wins, I think. Mm. Brand new stadium. I mean, and I love coaches that do that, too, because, you know, they're not just trying always to look for the next best thing. You know, Art Briles is like, I have something good here.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, those are the best positions because you have opportunity to build. At Texas, yeah, sure, Charlie Strong's going to have an opportunity to build, but not like he did at Louisville.
There's going to be too much pressure.
There's always – you're expected to win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And you should be everywhere. That's the expectation you should hold over yourself is that, you know, everything but winning is unacceptable.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a difference, and we all know that. Texas, you're going to come in, and immediately you're going to be expected to win, and as soon as you don't, everyone's going to question you.
Mm-hmm.
Every
criticize.
Loss, everyone's going to question you.
Criticize.
You're recruiting. They're going to question everything about what you
it's
do.
It's one of the hardest places to coach. That's
and
why
that's also why you get paid millions of dollars.
Because it's like, hey, you're coming here. We had a coach. The last coach before you was here 16 years.
Yeah.
So how long are you going to stay here?
Yeah, and, I mean, that's why he's the highest paid state employee.
For coaching football, that shows you how much Texas likes football.
Yeah.
He's the highest paid
president
of Texas.
I don't think Charlie
Strong's salary.
He
may not be anymore, but I think it's still
Matt Brown was.
Yeah, I think it's still a coach. It may be Kevin Sumlin now or Art Briles, I don't know, but it's still a football coach.
Probably the next highest paid football coach.
Yeah, probably. I think it is Kevin Sumlin because Charlie Strong signed 5 years, $25 million. So I mean, he got a little rough. You do the math.
That's still $5 million.
That's still,
$5 million.
I'd take it.
That's about what Matt Brown was making.
Yeah, it's pretty close. All right, well, let's move on. And well, first, let's make a prediction. How many years do you think it'll be before Charlie Strong's winning 10 games a season? And
oh, it's gonna be about 3 or 4. It's gonna be about 3 or 4.
Okay. What about you?
I think coming in and playing in the Big 12, which is, I mean, it's a good conference, but it's not the SEC.
Yeah.
I think he could come in his first year and win 10 games.
Really?
Just strictly off of him being new.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about when you bring in a new coach.
Brings more people.
People are excited. There's an excitement. I mean, look at what happened here.
Yeah.
We brought in a new athletic director and a new football coach, and there was excitement around the programs. And everybody seemed to kind of flourish and have success. And it's not that – like here, Ryan didn't do anything. He made great improvements and put people in positions to have success.
Mm-hmm.
But also him being new and changing things up a little bit really brings that freshness to a program that Charlie Strong will also bring, like Colby brought here, that people will be excited. The players will be excited. Not that they weren't excited under Mac Brown, but there's something new about it. And also the recruits he brings in. He's going to bring in all kinds of new recruits, and I don't think – that many players will really leave because of Matt Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to be at the University of Texas, and you're going to get to see maybe you can be a part of a program that historically has had tons of success. Maybe you can be a part of the turnaround.
Yeah, and then with Charlie Strong, he brings a whole different aspect of football because Matt Brown kind of brings that old school football.
Yeah,
he kind of likes certain quarterbacks.
Matt Brown was never a win at any cost.
Yeah, he was like
go around the rules or anything. I mean, not saying Charlie Strong is, but...
But Charlie Strong has a way to get the athletes. Like, you go to Louisville, 37-15 in Louisville, all 4 years he went to a bowl game.
Yep.
He's recruiting people like Teddy Bridgewater. The Auburn running back that got in trouble, he got him to come to Louisville and just flourish. Like, he got athletes, like, on defensive side and on the offensive side. He got athletes. That's why in the American Conference, he was like 11-1 every year. Because he just got athletes. And that's what Texas needs. I think this past couple of years has been hurting them. It's like, okay, let's get the best running back in the state. Well, you got the best running back, but you don't have no offensive lineman that can pull worth the crap to block for him. Like, you saw that game against Oregon. They couldn't even match up to the athletes Oregon had. 30-7, you don't ever hear Texas getting beat that bad. But it's because they don't have the athletes these other schools have. Like, you have people that, like, the freshman from Florida State run a 4.37. He's the fastest freshman in the country. He plays for Florida State. The second fastest, the third fastest, and the fourth, fifth, and sixth play for Oregon. Like, come on, you have to. This game now, you have to have speed. You just can't have bruisers.
You either have, and you got to have both, but you got to have either one. You can't be in the middle.
Yeah, you can't. Texas was in the middle.
Oregon, it's all about speed from the linemen to the receivers. Mm. Everybody's fast.
And Auburn's all about bruising you.
Auburn's all about bruising. And they have speed too. And everybody's bigger than you. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. That's why they were able to be successful.
Yeah.
You got to pick your strength and recruit and play to that strength.
And Texas just. Every year for the past 4 years, Texas has been like, okay, we'll get the best running back. The quarterback has always been like,
I think we saw with Nick Saban really developing your system. I think Nick Saban, every player he gets fits the exact mold that he wants. And just strictly from a physical standpoint, he can run this fast, he can bench this much, he's this tall, he weighs this much. Like, every player looks the same.
Yes.
And the people that have gone to Alabama have told me that you know, you walk in and you see all four offensive linemen, and they look like brothers. Like, they look the same
as far as
their physique and their height and their strength. They all look the same.
Mm.
It seemed like, you know, places like Texas and Mack Brown, there's still coaches out there that would just recruit who's the best football players they can get. And instead of fitting each mold, each position, a certain person will go to this spot.
Yeah.
And that's kind of systematic, and it's not as – I don't think it's as much fun as you'd like to see.
It's not sexy.
It's not sexy. It's not Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
That's what A&M has. They have some good players. They have Mike Evans, and they have Johnny Manziel. They get some really good players.
Yeah.
Does that win championships?
Nope.
A&M drops games. I mean, especially in today's football. Maybe a while back that would.
I think Vince Young was the last time that happened.
And they got away with it the last time something like that
Because USC had the same type of team. They had certain players that was good at their position, but overall they were horrible.
I wouldn't say horrible.
Well, okay, they weren't horrible.
A lot of times it's not about putting just the best, just randomly getting good players.
If that was true, the Cowboys would win every season.
Exactly. How do they all fit together? And Nick Saban does that in such a system that allows them to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're forgetting that Nick Saban's is what a Alabama is, a missed field goal returned at the end of a game away from
the national championship,
playing for a national championship.
Yep.
I'm glad they didn't go, though, because I got tired of seeing Alabama.
Yeah, I'm tired of SEC teams winning. All right, well, let's segue then into the BCS. It's finally over. We're finally going
to
get a playoff.
And this was the best year the BCS had in the last year.
It made sense this year.
SEC team.
Yeah.
And I'm glad Auburn won. Like, even though I watched the whole game. And I'm
Florida
like,
State
okay.
won.
Yeah, I'm glad they lost. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad they lost, but at the same time, I had to tip my hats off to Auburn because people weren't expecting them to give Florida State a fight. And Florida State got punched in the mouth a couple times.
Yeah.
And Jameis Winston better be thanking his team because Jameis did not play good. He shouldn't even got the player of the game to me. He struggled.
Overall, the team effort. The returned kickoff was huge.
That he should have gave him the biggest hug after that because that's what won him the game because all the momentum was sucked out of Auburn at that point.
Yep.
Because they just had said how they had – the game under control, and when that dude, his hamstring, like, I don't think you saw it.
Yeah, I saw it.
His hamstring, one dude fell and messed up the whole wall, and they just ran right past him. And it's just, it's ironic because Auburn got there because of luck, and then bad luck strike them at the wrong time.
And I think it was the biggest comeback ever in a BCS bowl game, or maybe since a certain date, but it's been at least 10 years since something like that.
But I felt they was going to come back.
And
though.
I thought, this is going to be another one of these SEC – you know, non-SEC BCS games that ends in a blowout or, like, you're watching the whole game and it never gets closer than 14 points and it's just terrible to watch. But it ended up being, you know, a great end to what's been a controversial system to determine a champion.
It was really good. Like, from the tip-off, like, the only thing I don't like about the championship game is how much they talk about it and they only just talk about one team. And I knew – you know, that is Florida State.
Yeah.
And I'm like, y'all not giving Auburn no credit. Like, Auburn beat some good teams, too. It's a reason why they're there.
Yeah, but definitely.
That drop pass early on in the game by Auburn, that cost them. Because they was marching down the field, he threw a wide open pass, and he dropped it. And it was too many, like, missed opportunities for Auburn. Like, you have a quarterback in Jameis Winston that has won every single award that you could possibly give a quarterback. And then on the other team, you have a quarterback that didn't win nothing, like nada. Like, they still telling him he's lucky for beating Georgia off that Hail Mary pass that the dude should have picked off. So for him to come into a game like that where he got absolutely no credit, he played really, really good. Mm-hmm. But they running back Trey Mason, he's for real.
He is for real.
He's for real. And they two offensive linemen was killing Florida State the whole game. Mm-hmm. Like, Auburn runs the football, and they ran it against the top defense in the country. He almost had 200 yards rushing.
Yeah. All right, well, let's end the show with talk about the playoff. We've got four teams now. How do you guys think that's going
to
work?
I think that's great. And you know, I'd like to see maybe eight teams, three mm-hmm. weeks or something like that. But, you know, four teams is going to be great to watch, too. You know how much more excitement that's going to add? Because the bowl games right now, yeah, I like watching bowl games. I like watching the Fiesta Bowl, the Orange Bowl.
But yeah, but
really,
the little ones don't matter.
The little ones suck.
And what does it really matter? I mean, the Orange Bowl's important, and I guess they're important, but mm-hmm. what are they? That's the last game of the year they're playing for, and it's not a national championship, so why do I care?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, even as a basketball fan, I really don't care about the NIT. Like,
yeah, you
that's
really
just
don't.
Everyone who didn't make the NCAA tournament.
Second place. Yeah.
Although, you mentioned the NIT. That's actually, it used to be just as big as the
NCAA.
Oh,
yeah, it used to be
and then,
determined the national championship.
Yeah, and then
I mean,
the
NCAA
were like, we don't want competition, so they bought them out.
We're talking a super long time ago. But
yeah, yeah,
that's a whole other story.
Yeah,
let's get
that's,
back
a whole
on
another that's a whole other show.
yeah.
But, you know, the NCAA tournament, I watch that because each game determines, you know, who's out of the national mm-hmm. championship.
And they're all good games.
And they're all great games. And this is going to be the same way that the team's fighting, mm-hmm. you know, to get in that last game is going to – it's going to be really tough on these teams.
Yeah.
To be honest. And, you know, injuries are going to play a part in it too because you're not going to have the whole month off just to recuperate and get everyone healthy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's really going to determine to me who's a champion.
They need to get rid of the bowl games because the first week of bowl season is always horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you got teams.
Well, it's all
other
about
teams.
Green.
Yeah, it's so like it's you got teams money. That you know is going to blow out this other team.
Yeah, well, and then what's really getting weird is, like, the past two or three years we've had, like, two or three random bowls, like, right before the championship. Like, this
that's
year.
That's what I'm saying, the BBA was, Compass Bowl.
Yeah.
KFC Hunger Bowl. Why yeah. are those games so late?
They should be
way earlier. They should be like the 21st of December. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you showing fans these sorry games before the big game?
Yeah, it was Arkansas State.
And Ball somebody. State. Like, yeah. why are we watching
them? If people
them?
Will watch, they'll do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's making
that,
money.
That's
what kills me, man.
The
like,
truth of it.
Why mm-hmm. would you put the BCS games and then put the GoDaddy Bowl after the Sugar Bowl?
Yeah, that didn't
what?
Make sense.
That's disrespectful. Like, okay, I'd rather watch the Rose Bowl, but I don't want to watch the Compass Bowl after the Rose Bowl. I just seen two good teams. Why am I seeing two average teams mm-hmm. from a mid-American conference or yeah. from the God knows where, some conference I never heard of, with Kent
Sun
State.
Belt or
yeah, like, why are we watching this? And yeah. I know not that many people watch it. I know can't that many people watch it.
Yeah, but still makes enough to justify.
Makes
that's
more
what
than
it is
no
about.
Game.
But yeah. the playoffs going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, I think so, especially if it expands and people realize the kind of money they can make. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for us today. There may be some changes in store for how we do the show over the next few weeks, but we'll keep you posted on that. Anyway, Cooper Welch.
I'm Jordan Davis.
And Taylor Phelps.
And we'll see you next week. This is KETR's Locker Room.